We know now that in the early years of the 20th century, this world was being watched closely by intelligences greater than man's, and yet as mortal as his own.
Hello and welcome to Terrifying Robot Dog, episode 23 for Friday, September 11th, 2015. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Schaber.
And we're here to talk about how technology is changing the way we interact with the world. This week, aliens land on the White House lawn. Thanks, Obama. Please stay tuned. Terrifying Robot Dog is next.
Regrets, I have a few.
Yes. So Kelly came across an article about something the Japanese call the 5 o'clock bell that got us thinking about broadcast mechanisms that are still alive and well in this age where peer-to-peer communications have kind of taken over the world. So, you know, smartphones and iPads and all of the, it's even television shows are basically two-way at this point. But there are still these sort of centrally controlled broadcast mechanisms that exist where a very, very small handful of people are allowed to, send out highly trusted messages across an interesting range of channels that we're going to talk about today. And thinking about what that, what the implications of that are. So, without further ado, maybe Kelly, you could explain the 5 o'clock bell article.
Yeah, the 5 p.m. bell.
Yeah,
that's not its official name. Its official name is very long and unpronounceable in my native tongue. So, since I do not speak Japanese, I will just explain to you what it is. Japan has an early warning and emergency alert system that they put in place back in the 60s after a major earthquake. And the intention of it is to just, you know, be able to warn citizens about incoming disasters, terrorist attacks, earthquakes, tsunamis, that sort of thing. So they can broadcast to specific geographic regions or to the entire country. And the reason it's called the 5 p.m. bell is that's where it gets kind of interesting for me, is because these governments have taken this early warning system and they've sort of started using it for other things. Like, for instance, when they do their daily tests, they've kind of gotten into the habit of, okay, well, if we're going to test it every day anyway, might as well make it useful. So they do this 5 p.m. music playing and it reminds all the kids that, oh, hey, it's getting late, it's time to go home. Or they'll use it for announcements about things that are going on around the city. Or sometimes they'll just use it for these kind of weird sort of things that, I guess culturally to the Japanese are probably not strange, but from my perspective, they'll say things like, good morning, let's all remember to do our best today and talk kindly to children and things like that.
Which on the surface you'd think, that's not a bad thing to say.
Right.
But, you know, these are like really loud loudspeakers that are, you know, placed not just in urban areas, but also in the countryside. They're spread everywhere, like wherever the population is. And I mean, I think it's a little much to even be testing them every single day.
Yeah, I tend to agree. We have a similar, but not quite as invasive system here. We have a big siren with a speaker downtown in the middle of town. And then we have radios that can communicate disaster and emergency alert messages to the school systems and the hospital and places like that. And they test the siren downtown once a week, and then they test the radios. And then we also have a cable television override. I think it's tested monthly or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can remember back in the day when, you know, we were kids and you pretty much had the TV on all day and there were three stations. And every once in a while, right at the most important part of Dukes of Hazzard,
the emergency broadcast system.
Yeah, exactly. And if, you know, in the event of a real emergency, the Dukes of Hazzard would be harmed. But in this case, they're fine. And we cut back to the action after it's over. So thinking back to that sort of public alert system, I mean, it's hard to argue against it. It seems like a good idea.
It does. I agree. It is a good idea.
And it comes down to the things that are sort of strange about it are, I guess, a matter of degrees. So we actually have one here as well, and one in the state forest where we spend a lot of time in the summer. They have them as well. There you see these gigantic loudspeakers on these, you know, 40-foot telephone poles just sprinkled throughout the woods, because there's sometimes forest fires there, so they want to alert everybody in the most obvious way, which is a gigantic loudspeaker. And right. In my experience with those, I have two things that I've noticed with them. One is that in our area, they don't test them very often. So when one goes off, almost always there's this weird cognitive dissonance where you're trying to figure out, like, what is that? Because it's such a strange, it's like a very, very loud sound, but from really far away. So you can't tell if it's coming from the basement, or you're like, what the heck is that? And that's the first thing that happens. So there's this weird, you know, I don't know. They don't test it enough, I think. That is the question. The ones that we have around here, I mean, we're talking like once every 6 months I hear this thing. And the other thing is, when you do hear them, you can't understand a word they're saying. It's like Charlie Brown's teacher. Like, wah, 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 wah. Like, I can hear the local college football games on a Saturday. I can hear those announcers better than I can hear this thing when it ever goes off.
Right. That just reminded me, when I was living in Berea for a year, there's a system down there, a loudspeaker and an emergency alert system, because it is located very near to the Bluegrass Army Depot, which is a big chemical weapons depot.
Fun.
And the speakers are basically, you know, oh, there's been a breach. You have like a minute to get several miles away or you're going to die.
Just kidding. Just a test.
Yeah, but they would test them, and they would also use it to make announcements. And it's been so long that I don't remember what the announcements were for, mm-hmm. but they weren't emergency announcements.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't understand it. And everybody, like, unless you heard the siren, everybody just ignored anything that was illegibly spoken over the speaker.
Yeah. So that's okay. So that's those two things are kind of the two ends of the spectrum. It's like, on the one hand, you want to test it enough so that people don't have this weird disconnect when it does happen, and they're just like super freaked out by it, like what, or just confused by it.
Yeah, you don't want to make them panic more.
Right. But you don't want it to be so frequent that everyone just ignores it. Because, oh, this is the 5 o'clock. It's the 5 p.m. bell.
Yeah.
There needs to be some balance there. And it sounds like, I mean, in my experience, the balance isn't struck. And certainly in this, in my area, and in the article, there are definitely cases where it was way too far overused, to the point where not only was it useless, but it was irritating to the point of people moving to a place where they didn't have it. So you gotta take that as sort of feedback. So what does this have to do with, like, you know, modern technology? So these things are, at least in the case of the Japan article, was it Fuji that makes the Fujitsu General?
Fujitsu General, yeah. They're in the process of upgrading these systems.
Yes, so now they're all digital.
Well, they're about 30% digital at the moment.
Sorry.
The goal is for them to all be digital.
Yes. And so they do these extra things. So, like, it's not just a loudspeaker on a pole. It's a broadcast station on a pole, which includes a loudspeaker, but also can send broadcasts to things like fax machines.
Cell phones. Televisions.
Yep. So they're sort of like, they have a wide array of radio broadcast mechanisms built into them that, you know, will sort of reach whatever output device somebody might have near them or on them.
Devices for the hearing impaired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't understand how that works.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what
Japan must have some kind of crazy networked hearing aids.
I mean, maybe there's a radio frequency that hearing aids pick up. That is not normally allowed to be broadcast on, or something.
That would make sense.
Yeah, it would be impressive that somebody thought of that. But imagine if, like, all of a sudden your hearing aid starts goes,
Yeah.
Run.
Yeah, especially run. If you live in a prefecture or a town that abuses this thing and makes announcements like 5 times a day.
Yes. Don't forget to wash your hands.
Yeah. I'd be taking the hearing aids out.
Yeah. It's like you're hearing voices from the government. So, okay, so that's Japan. We both have a couple of examples here. You have another example that's always struck me, which is your local school does these broadcasts.
Yeah, my local school does these annoying things. It's not nearly as sophisticated. It's just a robo-caller and a text message service. And they will... Initially, they started it so they could say, oh, when there's bad weather, they could alert parents of delays in school closings. But now we get calls that are like, there's a basketball tournament this weekend, or tomorrow's picture day, and don't forget that this such and such fundraiser ends on this day. And it's one of the main reasons we canceled and just like did away with our landline phone.
like that's like moving because you live near one of these 5 p.m. bell speakers.
Yeah, they would call. I'd say we got at least 4 or 5 calls a week. And then during the winter, when there actually were closings and delays, we would get calls at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Mm. Mm. So, you know, it's just another example of a broadcast mechanism that was being abused by the authority. I'm trying to think of other ones that I've grown up around or I'm aware of. I grew up next to a lighthouse, which is like...
Old school.
That's old school.
Like I grew up next to a smoke signal. Sorry, go ahead.
It didn't wake us up, but man, the coughing. And now I live next to a church, so we get on the weekend. Geez, no, we get noon and 6 o'clock church bells.
There's a church here that feels the need to play music like 4 times a day on their quote unquote bell, which I think is really just a speaker that plays a recording of a bell.
Mm. Ouch. So the thing about the lighthouse and the church bell is that there's something tasteful about it that obviously you're not going to get like, you know, there's a tsunami on the way from that kind of a notification. But it's an example of this sort of broadcast, localized broadcast of a really loud audio signal that doesn't really...
Or bright light.
Yeah, I didn't see that from my bedroom. We weren't that close. Well, we were that close, but there were trees in the way. But the point is that both of those really loud sounds that were just became part of our landscape and were actually quite pleasing. And
yeah.
I feel like there might be a way to do the audio broadcast thing, the loudspeaker thing, in a way that is not horribly distasteful. You know, something subtle, there's something, it's like this weird balance of subtle and loud.
I think that's why they play music during the official tests.
But the official tests in the Japanese thing are like 30 seconds of a song. It just sounds like it's I don't know, maybe it's cool. You know, maybe it's like carefully edited so that it doesn't like just cut off in the middle of a stanza, which is what I imagined. Like this giant loudspeaker just going like, you know, bah, 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 off. You know, just yeah, like awkwardly cutting it off. So anyway, the
cell phone alerts.
The cell phone alerts. Here. Right. Well, and so these things broadcast to cell phones, but we also have anybody who's got an iPhone is probably, you know, I think iPhone, starting with iPhone 4, they were enabled for Amber Alerts and government emergency warnings.
Yeah. I also have it on my Android.
Do they are? Okay. I wasn't sure if I ever remembered seeing one on Android, but. Yeah, so
I slept through one this morning.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. You had like what was the
I had the epic 12-hour unconsciousness.
Nice. That's always good. But you slept through a tornado or something?
No, I slept through an alert about a flash flood warning. Oh.
Yeah. We got one of those recently too, actually, as a matter of fact. But so we get so people have probably seen these because they also do Amber Alerts. And technologically, this is pretty interesting when you start to dig into it. They don't use SMS and they're not normal push notifications. The carrier just sends a signal from cell towers in the area that is appropriate. So like the area within which the alert matters. So they're not targeting. It's not like if people are familiar with the way push notifications actually work, you can geo-target push notifications, but that has to do with Apple knowing where you are. Mm-hmm. This is about the cellular company. So, you know, in the US, probably like AT&T or Verizon or T-Mobile or Sprint. This is more about them knowing where their cell towers are.
Yeah, you just have to be within the proximity of their cell tower.
Right. So it doesn't matter if you are, you know, if you're from Texas and you're in Rhode Island and an Amber Alert for Providence, Rhode Island, is broadcast, you're going to get it on your phone because your phone is near these cell towers.
Which is pretty cool.
It really is. It's kind of like, elegant in a way, which is shocking for cell carrier.
Yeah, it is. And it's outside the band of normal cell phone, you know, communications and traffic. So it's not subject to like delivery delays like you might have with text messages, or you're not going to get a busy signal or anything like that.
Yes. Well, yes. And speaking of 9/11, I think I can certainly remember. I had a sister in Manhattan, and there was the cell network was totally saturated. You could not get a phone call through, in or out. And that was very stressful.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Mm. So this is all well and good, but we both started thinking, now that these things are digital and wireless and attached to the network and therefore hackable.
Yes.
Right? And
yes, and you can't block all of the messages on our emergency alert systems.
No, you cannot. So just like Find My iPhone or whatever ignores your settings. So if you could set your phone to Do Not Disturb and Don't Make a Sound or I Will Smash You mode.
Yes.
If you have your phone set to that, you can still make it make a really loud noise using Find My iPhone, which makes sense because
it does.
Yeah, because it means you've lost your phone and it's like under the couch, between the couch cushions or something. You want it to start screaming, even though regardless of how you have it set. So the alerts on iPhone and presumably Android as well. I don't know if I think I only read. No. This is FCC ruling. Yeah. So it's got to be all mobile phones.
Yeah. All mobile phones that support it. Yeah.
There are three kinds. There's the Amber Alert kind, which are usually related to, it's not just, you know, missing child. It can also be other police authority style crime alerts.
Oh, can it?
Yeah.
I thought Amber Alert was just like missing children and like disabled adults and that kind of thing.
Well, it's not, I don't know what all it extends to, but it's not just missing children.
Okay.
I might be thinking that because of what you just said, which is it could be other kinds of missing people. But I can imagine that like during the Boston bombing, they were sending, you know, you send it out. Yeah. There's a bunch of guys with a crock pot full of dynamite, you know, on Mass Ave.
Crock pot?
Yeah, or pressure cooker. It's a pressure cooker. Pot. It wasn't a crock pot.
It's a slow cooker.
We're not actually laughing.
Laughing at crock pot. I'm not laughing at dynamite on Mass Ave. No. I'm laughing at crock pot.
No. So anywho, here come the one stars. What I'm trying to say is there are three kinds of alerts that the FCC has defined, and cellular companies, it's a voluntary thing, but adoption has been widespread among the U.S. carriers. There are three kinds of alerts. They're issued by the president. That's number one. Number two is alerts involving imminent threats to safety or life. And the third one is the Amber Alerts.
Yes.
And
you can't shut off messages from the president.
And the president one you cannot turn off. So if the carrier supports it, and like I said, it's the support is widespread, so your carrier almost certainly supports it, you can't turn off the ones from the president. So imagine the trust that you would place in even the Amber Alert. I have them all turned on. I don't have any of them turned off. And I've gotten a couple Amber Alerts, not that many, maybe one or two in a couple years. But I've gotten several flood alerts. I've gotten hurricane warnings because we're in that kind of an area.
Yeah, I get a lot of flash flood alerts.
Yep. And, you know, they're good. And when they come in, you believe them. You don't ignore them. They're very loud. And when you see them, you're like, this is from a trusted authority. This is from an authorized sender.
Right. I've gotten alerts. I've gotten flash flood alerts many times and received them and go, oh, this doesn't apply to me because I'm actually not in the part of the county that floods. But I've never gotten one and going and gone, that's not true.
Yeah. Or I'm not going to read that.
Yeah.
It's not like when somebody hacks your buddy's Facebook account and is like, oh, I'm in Russia. Can you send me $300?
Yeah. You trust the source.
Yeah, it's implicitly trusted. And so that's what got us thinking about the War of the Worlds thing, where, you know, I had never even read up in the story. I mean, it's like, it's almost folklore to me.
Yeah, me too. I've listened to the broadcast, but I'd never read up much on the story.
You have? I've never even heard it.
I listened to it when I was like 14 or 15.
Wild. And did you...
We can link to it in the show notes. It's all available online.
I'm sure everybody knows this story. Maybe not. I don't know. There's probably some youngsters out there. There was a radio show back in the day when there was such a thing, you know, it was kind of like a podcast, but it was actually on radio.
He says while recording the podcast.
Right. It's kind of like a podcast that you could never hear again. It was like podcasting for Snapchat. So what was the year? 1968? No.
I thought it was 50.
1938. No,
1938, wow.
Yeah, 1938 on the CBS radio network. Orson Welles narrated this show, which they clearly said at the beginning was a dramatized version for Halloween, and that it was a radio play. But it was in the form of like an Onion article, where they totally made it like breaking news: aliens have landed in Grover's Mills, you know, New Jersey, and blah, blah, blah. You know, I've never heard it, but I imagine that's exactly what it sounded like. And people freaked out, like, because the radio is like, this was at the time, especially, and still actually, I think,
it was a trusted source.
Yeah, it's a trusted source because the people who are saying stuff have something to lose by lying.
Yeah. Yeah. And they missed all of the mentions that this was a fictional broadcast. And in 1938, we had no idea what was out there.
She says, like we do now.
Well, yeah, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. So we were like, imagine if you got a presidential wireless emergency alert that aliens landed on the White House lawn, or that an asteroid the size of the moon was going to hit the Earth in 23 minutes.
Or that there were nuclear missiles on the way from some country.
Yeah, that would, so, okay, of course, you know, yeah, it's the end of his second term, but I'm pretty sure Obama's not going to do that. Like April Fools, no asteroid.
It's not going to happen.
Right. But this stuff's all connected to the network.
It is. And if I got that message and it was something absurd, like aliens have just landed on the White House, I'd look at it and I'd wonder what was going on. But if I got that message and it had said there had been a terrorist attack on such and such location, you know, you're secure, you need to get somewhere safe. Hmm. I wouldn't think twice about it. I'd just do it.
Yeah. If they said that there was, there are a bunch of credible, non-ridiculous sci-fi alerts that could come across that, you know, the water supply in the northeastern United States has been poisoned. Don't use any water whatsoever. And, you know, it, like, just go out and get as much bottled water as you can. You can just see the freak out.
Yeah.
Like, the people running out of their houses. Or, like, you know.
And, yeah, not everybody's going to fall for it. But a lot of people are.
Yeah, it depends on how credible the claim is, I suppose. But, or how localized it is. And let's just say, what would be a credible claim for you?
Credible claim for me would probably be, like, for instance, had it been when I was in Berea, anything having to deal with the Bluegrass Army Depot would have been a credible claim.
And what would your reaction be? Like, what would you do? Would you do anything to try and confirm it? Would you call someone? Would you check Twitter? Would you go on Facebook? Would you turn on the TV if you have one?
It totally depends on what I was doing at the I think at the time, back when I was there, which was like 20 years ago, I would have just like said, okay, I'm going to get out because I don't have time to confirm this. Because back then, confirming it would be a lot more difficult than it is now, because now I could just pull out my phone and look on Twitter and and find out. But
So like, it depends on the type of the thing. So like, if somebody, if I got a hurricane alert and it was like a completely gorgeous day and I knew that I hadn't, this been, because when a hurricane's coming, a hurricane's not like a tornado. It takes, it, you know, it's coming, you know, it might hit you. So like, if you have that fear sort of like lingering in the back of your mind and then you get one of those alerts, you head to the bomb shelter.
Right.
But if it was a gorgeous day and it's not hurricane season and the weather hasn't been talking about it endlessly like they love doing, then, you know, you'd be like, what? This must be a mistake.
This has got to be a mistake. Yeah. But if you, it said at the same time, if you saw something about, well, the water supply is compromised, you may confirm, you may try and confirm it first, but you're not going to drink any water in the meantime.
Exactly. Exactly. And we live about, 20 minutes driving from a nuclear power plant, which I know, you know, I'm old enough to remember like Three Mile Island and all that stuff. But, and I know that power plants are, you know, like version 10, and that was version one, and they're way safe now, but still it's over there.
Yeah. It still gives you pause to think about it.
Yeah. Cause it happened a million years ago with like lame technology, a bunch of people like the last time a nuclear power plant really melted down, it was when people used to smoke cigarettes in the bank.
Well, no, Fukushima.
I mean, in the US, but you're right. Okay. That was actually that. Okay. That's a good point, because that was like this bizarre catastrophic, well, it was a tsunami. It was like earthquake slash tsunami slash nuclear meltdown. Like, I was ready. I was waiting for Godzilla to show up. That was the worst.
Like playing a game of King of Tokyo.
I've never played that, but I can imagine. So that was the other thing I was going to say. Like, a tsunami is like one of those things that's totally unexpected, or an earthquake, totally unexpected, not weather dependent. So there's no, you can't like look around and be like, nah, this can't be true.
Yeah.
So like, what do? You just have to react. You have to assume it's true, because it's coming across a credible channel that has a lot to lose. Well, if the, you know, the actual approved senders are the ones that sent it, you have to assume they have a lot to lose. They wouldn't do this because it's just going to end up spending their own money to fix it. But if some jokester, I mean, this was the, this is like the hack of all time. Like if you're like looking for lols, this is,
yeah, don't
the hack
a bank, hack an emergency alert system.
Oh my. And you know, do you have, what's your level of confidence in the security of something like that?
Now that I'm thinking about it, probably no more than any other government system.
Exactly. Here's a funny thought. What if you could figure out how to send that to a specific iPhone?
Just, well, see, that's just the thing. You just stated you can't do that because it relies on the cell phone towers.
Right, but they're like repeaters, and maybe you could hack a repeater to just broadcast it in like your block, or just to like your apartment. Not, you wouldn't do it in an apartment building. I just want to do it to Erica.
Like the guy that trolled his roommate with the Facebook ads?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking. Just totally troll one person. Like, it would be the best in an office if you like, if you like let everybody in on it except for one dude, and you turn on the repeater and broadcast this emergency alert, and he hears all the phones go off. He picks up his and looks at it, and it's like an asteroid is going to crash into Texas. It totally,
it's
jumps,
like, Dave, get out now.
Jumps up from his cube. Everybody else jumps up. Run. Dave starts running.
It's like you said one day, if you ever open your phone and it says duck.
Oh, that would be wild. Man, so it the thing. Okay, this is an interesting show related topic, which is the trust thing. Mm-hmm. My instant reaction, it depends on the thing, but my instant reaction is to check Twitter when I don't trust something. So yeah. If something comes across my newsfeed, the first thing I do is check Twitter.
I do that too, which is odd to think about, but I do the same thing.
Yeah. And it's like, because it would be, it's hard to, and I would look for stuff that wasn't echo chamber. I would look for like sources that were experts on the thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when the Ferguson stuff was going on, there was a particular guy whose name I don't remember, but I had him like bookmarked. That was like the guy I trusted about that. And you could imagine in like an Edward Snowden type of situation, I have a few guys, like security guys I follow on Twitter that are like the dudes that I would be like, okay, what does this guy think?
Yeah.
Because he's definitely going to be tweeting about it right now. But for something like an earthquake or a tsunami, there's no social proof for it. So I wonder if there's a, I wonder if there's a safeguard for hacking those systems, because you could pretty easily start widespread panic. If you were subtle and clever about it and you timed it well, you could really cause some trampolings.
Yeah. And I mean, even if only one third of the people fell for it.
Mm. Well, I mean, in the War of the Worlds thing back in 1938, there were all sorts of reported panics, looting, trampling. Mm-hmm. I think some of that stuff's in question. I don't know if it was ever like
confirmed,
but I mean, the police descended on that radio station and basically ripped everybody out of there. And hilariously, Orson Welles was like, "I'm washed up. My career's over." Meanwhile, it was the beginning of his career, which I probably shouldn't have said, because now some hacker's going to be like, "My career. I'm going to hack the emergency warning system."
Yeah, we should probably preface this with a "Don't try this at home."
Yeah, don't be a jerk. So, you know, what's the takeaway here? I don't know what the takeaway is.
I do think it's an interesting thing to think about.
Right. I mean, if nothing else, I guess it will, I don't know if this is good or bad, but if it hopefully we've instilled a second thought in the terrifying robot listener when one of these broadcasts happens, to just be like, oh, is this credible? Is this a credible thing? Or, you know, even if you're going to comply with it, you can still be asking yourself the question, okay, I'm not going to drink the water, but maybe I shouldn't panic.
I don't know. I find it interesting that a lot of these local governments in Japan have taken this early warning and disaster alert system and turned it into just a means to disseminate information to the public, whether it's useful information or whether it's let's all do our best today.
Yeah. Why waste decibels?
Yeah. And then if you just extend that logic of sending these messages through these newer systems, once it all gets digitized, it makes me wonder, like, are you going to go to Japan and get a text message telling you to work hard and be kind to the elderly?
And like, who votes against that? That's kind of like I can't even say it. It'd get too political, but it's like the way that people create names for bills that are actually quite evil, in my opinion, but they phrase the name of it in a way that no one could possibly vote against if they just read the name. So yeah, it's like, the thing that I can't get away from is like, who would even know if somebody was doing this? If someone
hacking the emergency alert system?
Yeah, if someone was trolling people, who would even know? Would Verizon know? Would AT&T even know? No, they wouldn't. Because this stuff's totally not tracked. It's like, well, they claim it's not. You know, like if you could broadcast on that same frequency that the cell tower is broadcasting on, you could totally troll a Starbucks. Just like North Korean tanks are coming up South Angel Street.
What prevents you from broadcasting on that frequency other than FCC regulations?
Probably nothing. There's got to be some kind of handshake and like.
Yeah. I'm sure signals are encrypted.
But still, I mean, what would? Who knows? Who knows? I have no idea. But I feel like it's probably a little low tech as these things go. Oh man.
Did we get anywhere with this?
No, not really. Hopefully, it was entertaining. But next week we're going to talk about wireless power.
Yes.
Which is right up everyone's alley. Well, terrifying robot listener, we hope you enjoyed that brief respite from actual thinking. That's our show for this week. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Schaber.
And we hope you join us again next week for Terrifying Robot Dog. Bye.
Bye. Sorry.
Would you like to give Terrifying Robot Dog 1 star on iTunes? Please don't. Would you like to support Terrifying Robot Dog? Just think of 2 friends who would dig the show and send them to terrifyingrobotdog.com for links to iTunes, Facebook, and RSS feeds. Thanks.